Good morning. God bless CPAC. Now, I do have to start with a bit of bad news this morning. I'm sorry to tell you that by virtue of your being here today, tomorrow morning each and every one of you is going to be audited by the IRS. So I appreciate the courage of your convictions. You know, yesterday Lois Lerner went before Congress and yet again pleaded the fifth. And of course, President Obama told Bill O'Reilly during the Super Bowl, there's not a smidgen of corruption with the IRS. Reminded me of one of my favorite movies. You keep on using that word. I do not think it means what you think it means. Somehow my understanding of smidgen was a little different than his. I want to thank you all for being here. You are here today at CPAC because you understand the stakes in this country have never been higher. You are here because you understand our country is at a crisis point. We are at the edge of a cliff. Liberty is under assault. And what I want to talk to you all about this morning is how we win. There are a lot of D.C. consultants that say there's a choice for Republicans to make. We can either choose to keep our head down, to not rock the boat, to not stand for anything, or we can stand for principle. And they say if you stand for principle, you lose elections. The way to do it, the smart way, the Washington way, is don't stand against Obamacare, don't stand against the debt ceiling, don't stand against nothing. I want to tell you something. That is a false dichotomy. You want to lose elections? Stand for nothing. Look at the last four congressional elections, 06, 08, 10, and 12. Three of the four, we followed that strategy. 06, 08, and 12, we put our head down, we stood for nothing, and we got walloped. The one election that was a tremendous election was 2010 when Republicans drew a line in the sand. We said we stand unequivocally against Obamacare, against bankrupting the country, and we won an historic tidal wave of an election. And then, of course, all of us remember President Dole and President McCain and President Romney. Now, look, those are good men. They're decent men. But when you don't stand and draw a clear distinction, when you don't stand for principle, Democrats celebrate. So I'm going to stand here today. And let's take, for an example, young people. Are there any young people here today? I got a note, by the way. Everyone should be cheering at that. Everyone is young and hard. If you are at CPAC, by definition, you are a young person because you believe in the future of America. But I want to give you an example of how we win young people. And that's an example of how we win elections across the board. I'm going to suggest a radical agenda to you. Hope and change. You look at the last 5 years of President Obama as hope has diminished across the world. As the people of Ukraine have seen Russian tanks move into their sovereign land, as the nation of Israel has been left without its friend and ally, the United States of America. If you look at home, with the lowest labor force participation since 1978, millions have lost hope because under President Obama, the American dream is harder and harder and harder for anyone to achieve. And I got to tell you, change, real change, is changing the corrupt and broken system that is here in Washington, D.C. How do you win young people? Who are the two Republicans in modern times who have most energized young people? Ronald Reagan and Ron Paul. So apparently the key is being named Ronald. But if you think of it, neither one of them were young, rugged, James Dean, rebel without a cause. They were septuagenarians. And yet what did they do? They stood for principle. They painted a bold, inspiring vision for America, for how all of us can be better. And young people came out by the millions and said, that's the vision I want to be behind.
I'm here today to talk about the fact that we as conservatives have got to be far more engaged in finding converts than discarding heretics. It is a great honor to be back at CPAC, but more than that, it's an honor to speak at this CPAC. You see, 2014 is an important year for conservatives. Yes, the White House agenda is crumbling. Obamacare is a disaster, and President Obama has lost the confidence of the American people. With things going so badly for the left, especially in an election year, conventional wisdom in Washington is that the best thing conservatives can do is, well, nothing. That is, that our strategy should be simply to sit on our hands, to keep our heads down, and let President Obama's failures preserve a Republican majority in the House and win one in the Senate. But I'm here to tell you that conventional wisdom in Washington, as usual, is dead wrong. That council is unworthy of the party of Lincoln and Reagan, and it's unequal to the task before us. President Obama and the Democrats have done everything they can to deserve defeat. But the Republican Party has not yet done what it must do to deserve victory. We've not yet... Thank you. We've not yet won back the trust of the American people, or explained exactly why they should give it to us. 2014 must be the year we change that. Most of the speakers you'll hear this week will come to inspire you, or flatter you, or claim solidarity with you. I've come to challenge you. The work remaining before us this year and for the next 3 years is the most important work conservatives have faced in a generation. It is the work of redefining our movement, of redefining and rebuilding our party, and rescuing our nation. That work will not be easy, or fun, or glamorous. Most of it won't even be noticed, but it is essential to our success. If conservatives do not do this work, we will lose. We'll lose in 2014, and in 2016, and beyond. We will lose, and we will deserve to lose. And whether the people at this podium are willing to do that work depends on whether the people in this audience and conservatives in communities around the country demand it. The last time conservatives faced this challenge was 37 years ago at the fourth annual CPAC conference. It was February 1977. And that winter, Ronald Reagan and his conservatives were being attacked by the Washington Republican establishment for challenging President Ford in the 1976 primaries. They were being blamed for handing a victory to Jimmy Carter and other Democrats. But Reagan knew that it was the party establishment that had lost that election by losing touch and losing credibility. He knew that the future of the GOP was not the old party of Republican insiders. It was a new party of conservative ideas. And so Ronald Reagan came to CPAC, and he called for a new Republican Party, a party of principles and confidence and a positive agenda for change. Conservatives then went about the hard, heroic work of applying timeless principles to timely problems, to pivot from purges to persuasion, from protest to reform. And those in the establishment never knew what hit them. You see, we can never forget that in 1976, anti-establishment conservatives found a leader for the ages, and yet they still lost. But by 1980, they had developed an agenda for their time, and they won. My fellow conservatives, it's time to do it again.
Thank you. What a great crowd. Great to be here. Imagine with me for a moment. Imagine a time when liberty is again spread from coast to coast. Imagine a time when our great country is again governed by the Constitution. Imagine a time when the White House is once again occupied by a friend of liberty. You may think I'm talking about electing Republicans. I'm not. I'm talking about electing lovers of liberty. It isn't good enough to pick the lesser of two evils. We must elect men and women of principle and conviction and action who will lead us back to greatness. There is a great and tumultuous battle underway for the future, not of the Republican Party, but the future of the entire country. The question is, will we be bold and proclaim our message with passion, or will we be sunshine patriots retreating under adverse fire? Will we be firm in our convictions, or will we cower, defeated, and meekly dilute our message? Will we water down the Bill of Rights, or will we be all on fire? Will we sit idly by and let our rights be trampled upon? Will we be like lemmings rushing to the comfort of Big Brother's crushing embrace? Or will we stand like men and women of character and say, we are free, and no man, no matter how well-intentioned, will take our freedom from us? Daniel Webster anticipated our modern-day saviors who wish to save us from having too much freedom. He wrote, good intentions will always be pleaded for every assumption of authority. It's hardly too strong to say that the Constitution was made to guard the people against the dangers of good intentions. How will history remember Barack Obama? To those who had hoped that President Obama would somehow be a champion of civil liberties, Roger Waters might ask, did they get you to trade your heroes for ghosts? Did they get you to exchange a walk-on part? Did they get you to exchange a walk-on part in the war for a lead role in a cage? I don't question President Obama's motives, but history will record his timid defense of liberty. When Congress passed legislation allowing for the indefinite detention of an American citizen without a trial, he shamefully signed it while promising not to use such a power. A great president, though, would have risen to the occasion. Instead of merely suggesting that he wouldn't use this dreaded power, a great president would have taken pen in hand and vetoed this abomination. A great president would have loudly proclaimed, Congress cannot and must not overturn the right to a trial by jury. A great president would have protected us from the prying eyes of the NSA. A great president would have proclaimed, I will not abide it. The Constitution will not abide it. To protect us if government were comprised of angels. Guess what? Madison readily admitted we weren't likely to ever be guided and governed by angels. It isn't so much what President Obama has done, although he's done a lot, none, very little good, but it's not that what he's done with his usurpations of power as much as it is the precedent that it sets for lawlessness that may follow. If the executive branch can initiate war, if the executive branch can detain citizens without trial, if it can amend legislation, if it can declare to Congress that Congress is in recess, then government, unrestrained by law, becomes nothing short of tyranny. Montesquieu recognized this. He wrote that when the executive branch usurps the legislative authority, when the president says, I can write the laws, watch me, he's got a pen, he's got a phone, he doesn't care what the law is, a tyranny will ensue, and we must stop this president from shredding the Constitution. Rights are innate. They come from our Creator, and no government can take them away from us. The Constitution merely codifies what exists before all time. Mr. President, we won't let you. We will not let you run roughshod over our rights. We will challenge you in the courts. We will battle you at the ballot box. Mr. President, we will not let you shred our Constitution. Our future hangs in the balance. We can debate a jobless recovery, an alarming debt, a bothersome and abusive regulatory state, but know this, you can't have prosperity without freedom. It isn't a message of the haves versus the have-nots, the rich versus the poor. It's a message for anyone who wishes to own their own destiny. America's greatness will not flicker if we believe in ourselves, believe in our founding documents. Believe that all men are created equal and that everyone can succeed. That brings freedom. It brings it not only with it, not only great prosperity, but extraordinary generosity. Anybody think it's great to be poor in Cuba? America's the most generous nation on earth. We can't forget about it, but it came with our freedom. They go together. It's going to take all of us together. It's going to take a national revival of liberty. America's greatness, America's exceptional character, it's not in our DNA, but it's in a republic. It's in our founding documents. It's in a republic that for the first time in history rewards all individuals, regardless of birth or gender or ethnicity. It's a republic that restrains the government, not the individual. Your task is not to minimize the loss of freedom, not to clutch at what we've got left. Your job is to maximize your liberty. So let's do it together. Let's take a stand. When the president refused to rule out droning of an American citizen, I took a stand. I filibustered. some things are worth fighting for. When I discovered that the NSA spied on and was collecting every American citizen's records, I took a stand. I sued the president. It is decidedly not a time for the faint of heart. It's a time for boldness and action. The time is now. Stand with me. Let us stand together for liberty. Thank you, and God bless you.
How I wish you were here. We're just two lost souls swimming in a fishbowl, year after year, running over the same old ground. What have we found?
Hello, Cleveland. Tonight, we're going to rock it tonight. This show goes to 11, and if you want to defeat the rhinos, you have to be one louder. So sack up and call in on this special episode of Liberty's Thunder Open Line Friday. The call-in number is 646-649-1013. That's 646-649-1013. Dial in, listen to the show, and if you want to ask a question or make a comment about grassroots conservative action, press 1 to get screened by a T-Rex or a caveman. CPAC is blowing through D.C. as the rhinos try to feign conservatism. POTUS tries to feign having balls, and bureaucrats defy congressional inquiry on behalf of the people. You just heard from Senators Cruz, Lee, and Paul expounding on a principled, effective, and successful approach to making the case for authentic American conservatism, a true reform of the Republican Party that can make the reforms of 1980 and 1994 pale in comparison, and a sound strategy to roll back the out-of-bounds government and restore constitutional sanity. But they can't do it alone. They need you. Unless you unite on first principles and become a grassroots tsunami of support, ousting the rhinos, sending in conservative reinforcements, and spreading the message about the conservative cause of liberty, the great American experiment in ordered liberty and self-governance will fail from within, and the whole world will plunge into darkness. Stand up and shout. You have a choice. Work hard now to further liberty by having real conservatives and real libertarians, you know, those who believe in authentic freedom regarding economics and politics grounded in moral truth, take over the GOP or watch the statists in both parties push their corporatist agenda to their benefit and our demise. Now is the last chance to stop those who want to fundamentally transform our republic into an empire abroad and a police state at home. End the destruction of our economy by the Republican-Democrat duopoly and their Keynesian masters at the Federal Reserve by standing with the real conservatives to defeat the cultural Marxists, the statists, collectivists, oligarchs, useful idiots, and their fellow travelers, especially the Democrat socialists. First, you must crush the rhinos for liberty. You are live on Liberty's Thunder with Rex and Trog, irreverent, relevant, and radioactive conservatism with a bite. I'm your host, Rex Tufnell, broadcasting from CPAC Central. Turn it up to 11 with the loudest internet radio show. Smell the glove and stand up and shout. Doctor?
Doctor, and I'm your co-host, deep from the caves in Crimea River.
Crimea River.
Oh, man. I really believe that should be the... the show title for Sunday. That was really good listening to those guys. I actually have been a little bit remiss, which is odd for me, on listening to CPAC, partly because the first thing I heard is we need to go to war and blow up the world and, you know, that kind of crap. And that was kind of frustrating. And the first day it seemed like every other speaker was some fake conservative, you know, dressed up like a conservative that was a rhino, and that was a little bit frustrating. So I kind of had to force myself to go back in and listen to speakers that I wanted to listen to. After the rhetoric of the last couple weeks, I just was not ready to hear the bull crap again. I don't quite understand, unless they're just so weak and so fearful and have no message and nothing to stand on for the last 4 years of a House majority, because they've given Obama everything he wanted, you know, voted for tax increases, voted for every debt ceiling, voted for everything, you know, just basically rolled over on everything. And the only reason they didn't roll over on Syria is the people rose up, and the only reason they didn't roll over on amnesty is the people rose up. But I think if you would have left it to the House and we would have had a distraction, they would have passed it. And they would have gone to war with Syria if they could have got away with it, because that's been on the plan for a long time, long before Arab Spring, long before Obama, long before Bush. You know, it's just part of the whole country. They got to blow up and take over because they don't submit to the IMF or the Fed banking system. And I don't know if people will ever understand that, but that's basically the war of the world. The war of the world is bankers. And it's either you're in debt to them and you owe them everything, or you're an independent country and you have your own financial system and your own gold and your own economy, and so then you are the enemy. That's really what it boils down to. So here we are again, trying to recreate the Cold War. Potentially a few of them I really believe would love to see us get in a war. Stupid. Yeah, it can't get any stupider than these people. So anyway, CPAC, amazing event. I don't know why they invite some of the people they invite unless they're getting weak and not quite sure what they stand for. But when I listen to, you know, Mike and Rand and Ted, outside of the stupid invasion of tanks, which is a total lie, the rest of it was very good. And that's the rule of law, freedom, the Constitution. And it's amazing to me that we got three people and maybe three or four others in the whole freaking Congress that even talked those things. And Rand, I just read a quick article. I posted the link. He had a packed house. He had standing ovations. He had, you know, lots of young people. And you wonder why. Because he talks about freedom. He talks about the rule of law. Of course, Cruz is very articulate on the rule of law. But he talks about fundamental things that we as Americans have lost. The Bill of Rights no longer is the law in this land. You may think it is, but it's not. NSA spies on you. You know, one warrant to cover the whole government and everything they want to steal of your information and your text messages and your computer activity and your cell phone and track you while you're driving down the road. Fourth Amendment, gone. Free press, do you really think we have a free press after what you've seen in the news the last couple weeks? You know, we have a parent press. You know, that's controlled by somebody, but it sure in the hell ain't free, and it sure in the hell isn't reporting anymore. You know, it's just a marketing game for war and everything else, whoever's in power. Second Amendment, I think, is the, you know, freedom of religion. Let's go to the First Amendment, freedom of press, freedom of religion, freedom of association. I think 300 people just got arrested in front of the White House protesting the pipeline. You know, it doesn't matter if you're for or against it. Bottom line is you can't protest anywhere in this country where there's Secret Service or you will be charged with a felony and thrown in prison. Doesn't sound like freedom to me. It kind of sounds like USSR, huh, Rex? Second Amendment, they're going after it everywhere they can. They're breaking into homes, you know, no-knock seizures in people's homes in California. Connecticut's trying to figure out how they can seize about 100,000 people's guns that all decided that they weren't going to register. That ought to be interesting. That could actually turn into the Ukraine. So, I don't know, folks. I don't know. I like Rand's message. Always have, always will. It's simple. It's important. If you don't have a sound economy and you don't have personal freedom, you ain't got shit. And all this other stuff that's important to you, whether it be pot or gay marriage or wars or lack of wars or what kind of car you can drive or what kind of toilet you can own or what kind of light bulb you can have in your house, when you can turn the lights on, what kind of temperature you can have or not have in your home, all that ain't going to mean shit. Because if the Bill of Rights is gone, then it's just a matter of who's in control and what they decide you're going to do or not do. Is your property yours or not? Is that little mud puddle on your property that you filled in a federal violation and now you go to prison and we'll seize all your property and we'll seize your land and you got to buy this insurance and you can't really keep what you thought you could and it's going to cost you 3, 4, 5 times more and then we're going to tell you how to eat and we're going to tell you when you can die by omission of care you used to be able to get in America. Welcome to the USSR. I think we did a show on this stuff. And the frustrating part to me is really, truly, Rex, I cannot believe how complacent Americans are. Whether it be the responses to articles I read or videos or what I see in the news and what they cover and what they don't cover and, you know, and what the frick are we doing in the Ukraine? You know?
I'm sorry.
Our country's
falling. Snapchat.
Our country is falling the hell apart, and we're doing what, where, why, you know, poking the bear? Stupid. Absolutely insane. And we've already cut a check for $1 billion. After it is guaranteed and proved that we were involved in the protests and the overthrow of a sovereign government, to what degree could be arguable, but we were there. And we spent over $5 billion over the last 20 years to basically dictate another country. And this is just one of, I don't know, 100, you know. I can't believe that Republicans can get on board with this and start chirping their chirp and being a bunch of parrots over something that, you know, if they wanted to get Obama and show how weak he was, all they had to do is show the recording of Nuland, the recording of Ashton, and the UN lady about the snipers were killing people on both sides. And they really, 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 really wanted to get it. They would show the U.S. intervention in a sovereign country. And but what do? Beat the war drums and think that's going to rile up the base. I don't think it is, Rex. I don't see any polls. You know why people aren't doing polls? Because they know American people would be pissed off right now. $1 billion. How's Chicago doing right now, America? You know, how's all these inner cities? How's your personal finances doing? So we topple another country.
Crimea.
Yeah, we topple a country, and then we write a check for $1 billion. Can you think of some veterans that could have used that money? Can you think of some old people that could have used that money? I mean, you've heard me before. I'm not anti-war. I'm anti-bullshit. And this is bullshit. So here we are. CPAC, we shall see. There's some great people there. And I hope people get it. I hope Republicans wake up. I hope independents wake up. We can't keep electing Democrats because they're frickin' socialists and communists. That's a fact. But we can't keep electing Republicans. I love what Rand said in the beginning of his speech when he said, and you think I'm talking about Republicans? No, I'm not. You know why? Because do you remember 6 years of George W. Bush administration? Do you remember the wars that we're still fighting? Do you remember the invasion of the world that we're still doing? Did you remember the increase of $200-300 billion a year of the of a defense budget when we really don't have any enemies as far as like major military? Well, we're trying to create one with Russia, but you know what I'm saying? You know, and the increase of the Department of Education, you sick of Common Core? Well, thank Bush. You know, and thank his brother, because he's like right on stage with Obama going, yeah, we got to do this Common Core thing. This will make America better. What the hell, people? Wake up. I love Rand Paul because he's not afraid, and Cruz and Lee, because none of them are afraid to say Republicans are half the damn problem in this country. And until
only
Republican
half?
Voters get it. Or only half, yeah, good point. And until Republican voters get this and quit voting in these old rhino neocon, I call them the Bush-era rhinos, get rid of them. I mean, we got Cornyn back on the ballot because I don't know why. I have no idea what happened down there.
Sorry,
and,
I threw up
Texas,
a little bit in my mouth.
Yeah, well, you know, Texas, we got Ted Cruz out of Texas, you know, the guy that came out of nowhere, couldn't win, and he won. And then they put frickin' Cornyn back on the ballot, in the primary. I'm just going, come on, people, wake up. Have you looked at his voting record? I mean, the guy's got like, what, 10, 11, 12 debt ceiling increase votes under his belt. How many times has he voted for cloture that allowed the Democrats to push through another debt ceiling or another tax increase or another abuse on your rights? You know, I mean, if you voted for cloture, then you voted for the bill. I don't care what your second vote was. You voted for the damn bill because you know exactly what you're doing. And you guys put him back on the ballot. Unbelievable. Unbelievable. So here we are. CPAC is on. John McCain's trying to get us in war with Russia. Oh, my God.
Yeah,
I don't know if
we can
get
that,
any.
That word, too. McCain.
I mean, recall him before he gets us in a frickin' World War IV. What's wrong with you people, Arizona? Recall him. We got him until 2016, if you don't recall him. This guy, every time you turn around, I see him in a picture with some, you know, with somebody like in Syria, and then he's in the Ukraine, and he was in Georgia before they convinced Georgia to go invade South Ossetia. And the last Olympics, it's kind of funny how America waits till Russia's busy in the Olympics to invade their territory, you know, or to cause a war. But come on, wake the hell up. Our country, Rome, is burning. Now, it ain't burnt to the ground yet, but it's in pretty bad shape. And it's
Rome's always on fire. And, you know, the whole thing with the Olympics, it's funny how, yeah, we agitate during the Olympics, but it's also interesting that for some reason, the Russians like to start conflicts right after they have their big nationalistic Olympic ceremonies. but no, the thing with Crimea, with Ukraine, Syria, or whatever, there's not necessarily known good guys involved. There's agitators all over the place. And generally speaking, when we send idiots over there like the friends of Obama who get ambassadorships and don't know anything about the countries that they're going to, or someone like Jihad Jane McCammon, they don't know the lay of the land. They don't know the ground, which is why a non-interventionist policy makes the most sense. Now, a non-interventionist policy doesn't mean isolationist, because we want to trade with everybody. Our wars is what's making trade and trust not possible. It isn't our business. And so we're weakening things. You know, Reagan's policy was peace through strength. The idea was to be such an overwhelming military power, to be so superior and far ahead of everybody else, that nobody would want to pick a fight with you, which gives you a projection of power and allows you to act from a position of strength diplomatically. It seems that the neocons and their meat puppet in the White House are employing a strategy of surrender through incompetence. I mean, you know, Obama decides he's going to reduce our military capability. Notice it's not defense spending that's cut, but military capability to pre-World War II levels the same week that we get this whole Crimea problem. And don't think those two things are unrelated. But the real battle is not over there. It's not in Crimea. It's not in Syria. It's not in Iraq, Afghanistan, Iran, or Africa. The real battle is here, because if this experiment in self-governance is going to work and continue and provide people with liberty and benefit the whole planet, then Americans have to stand up and be Americans, because these people that you send to Washington are drawn from the people. If you keep acting like jerk-offs, you will keep electing jerk-offs like Cornyn. I mean, I'm almost at the point where if it wasn't for the fact that Ted Cruz is from Texas, the fact that they put Cornyn back up on the ticket is enough reason for me to encourage Texas to secede. Luckily, they got Cruz, so I'm not going to call for that yet. But the idea is that you have to really pay attention, and you can't come into the game late and hope that, you know, you can convince the rhino to be conservative. You know, the fact is that there's no difference.
Sorry.
There's no difference between the neocon dummycrats and the neocon rhino camps. There's no difference. They just play this kabuki theater game to make you think there's an opposition so you have a choice. So the real fact is that you have a choice. The choice is you either don't play the game and they win. Period. That's what happens. If you stop playing the game, if you jump out of politics or you decide to go some alternate way when the Democrat-Republican duopoly controls every precinct and all the ballot access, then you've really kind of quit the game. And not, maybe not in your heart, maybe not morally speaking, but practically it's done. Duopoly is an insider's game. You have to take over one of the wings of the duopoly in order to affect change. But if you don't know who you are, you don't know what you stand for, you don't know the history of your country, and you have no principles upon which to measure what they say and what they do, then you will fall for all of their rhetoric. If you just listen to the Fox noise, Mitch McConnell, he doesn't come across like a turtle. He comes across like a conservative, but he isn't. And Ted Cruz exposed him with that last debt ceiling debate, vote. Where he forced Cornyn and McConnell to vote for cloture. Oh, and look what it did for Cornyn in Texas. Nothing. Cornyn won. So you have a choice. You can say, oh, you know, the Tea Party's around, but Cornyn got, you know, put back on the ballot. And
now what the fuck are we supposed to do? Where's the real pretty shit now, man?
And before you know it, the aliens are inside the cabin, and you're running out of ammo. What you
got
to do is focus up. So go.
I'm sorry to interrupt you, but I can't get this out of my mind until I say something. Did you see how McConnell came on stage?
No.
At CPAC?
I couldn't be bothered.
He tried to play the Charlton Heston thing where he walked out with a muzzleloader raised above his head.
Seriously?
I'm sorry. I'm freaking
I got to see that picture.
Man.
How ridiculous is that? A turtle holding a shotgun. I mean, come on.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Whatever. That's pretty funny. But look, that actually is a good point, because it proves to you that, look, these guys are acting like, you know, good old conservatives in whatever district they're in, but they suck at it because they're not. It's sort of like when Obama gets up to look like a commander-in-chief and he talks about corpsmen this and corpsmen that. You can't fake it, okay? The only problem is that all the consultants and the Madison Avenue media marketing and the pollsters and everybody else can get them to fake it during the campaigns, and unsuspecting liberals and unsuspecting conservatives end up voting for these guys. And then when they get in office, people are like, what happened? I thought there was like hopey changey stuff, and he's going to close Gitmo, and everybody's going to have a unicorn in their house and a rainbow shooting out of their ass. And instead, there's drone killings, the NSA spying on us, this Obamacare stuff isn't so free, and more people are getting – what happened? Well, he's a neocon Keynesian. So what do? We go the other way, right? And we elect the Bush. And what happens? There's more drone strikes and more wars and more neocon Keynesianism. That's what happens. So you have to realize you got to figure out who you are, what you stand for, and then work to get other people to understand that they can't be fed their information by the idiot box owned by the corporate media. They've got to think for themselves and elect people who actually not only share their beliefs and values and understand what America is, but can actually do something about it. It's wonderful to talk about liberty. It's wonderful to talk about conservatism and the Constitution. But the question is, can you do something about it? And as much as I like what Dr. Paul says and did for 40 years in Congress, he was truly, as far as a congressman goes, as far as a legislature goes, he was truly ineffective. He was the lone voice of sanity up on that hill. And he did a lot of good because he sparked an intellectual revolution. But as far as his abilities as a politician and a congressman, he didn't do much at all. On the other hand, you got Newt Gingrich. Now, maybe you don't like Newt Gingrich, maybe you do, doesn't matter. The point is, he was very, very effective. And what you have with this new breed of conservatives is a combination of principle, communication, and effectiveness. They're politically shrewd and they know what they're doing. Ted Cruz is a junior senator from Texas. Usually junior senators just kind of keep their heads down and their mouth shut and do whatever, you know, the bosses tell them to do. Ted Cruz isn't. He's outmaneuvering the rhinos. Now, granted, he hasn't really been winning too many actual victories. That's not because of Obama or Harry Reid. That's because of Mitch McConnell and John Cornyn and Bob Bailout Corker and Lindsay Lightness Loafers Graham and Jihad Jane McComet. That's why. The enemy is within. And I have no love for the Republican Party, but the Republican wing of the duopoly is the only ticket you have to restore constitutional government. Now, usually Chris and I have a lot to push forward, and that's why we are broadcasting a second show per week. So 9 p.m. Sundays, 9 p.m. Eastern on Sundays is our regular show, and we added Thursday nights, Liberty's Thunder Thursdays, which is our call-in show. But we couldn't do it last night, so here we are on Open Line Friday, and the lines are open. 646-649-1013. That's 646-649-1013. Chris, you got something you want to add, or should we go to calls?
No, I think that what you said kind of nailed it, and I think that the thing that we're facing going into 2014, you know, the Republicans, and I don't mean all of them, because I always got to be careful about that, because people always go, you know, Republicans are bad. And I'm going, well, yeah, some are, some aren't. But they've rolled over again and again and again and again and again. And now they want you to reelect them. And you know who they are. If you're a conservative, if you're a libertarian, if you're a liberty lover, if you're a Ron Paulite, you know who the bad ones are. And you have to get involved in your local state. You know, we can't go through all. We focus on the bigger races and the senators and things like that. But there's no way we can detail everything. You got to figure it out in your state. And it isn't that hard to go to the internet and go, okay, who's my senator and who's my house? Okay, there they are. Oh, that's a rhino. Okay, is anybody running against them? You know, and sometimes you have somebody that is primarying a really, really, really bad guy or gal, and they need your help. And other times it's like, oh, crap, all I got's a rhino running. So you got to make a decision. That's up to you as an individual. It would be nice to win back the Senate. It would be nice to keep the House. And that's a general rule. And then it would be nice to have the Senate and have some real conservatives in there win. And there's some good primaries going on with some pretty decent people that I've seen. I'm not endorsing anybody because I don't have enough time to do all this crap, you know, figure everybody out. You have to figure that out for yourself. But it seems like there's some pretty good people primarying. They need help. They need a lot of help, especially if they're going against an establishment politician. You know, it's got all the big money, you know, the war money behind them and the Wall Street money and the RNC and probably the Democrat Party too. Be honest with you, I wouldn't doubt it. And you know why? Because of the same damn people. You know, all you got to do is just look at the vote patterns for the last 4 years, and that ain't hard to do. It's called the internet. Just go look. Figure it out for yourself. If you'll do the work, you know, do the blood, sweat, and tears, I think you will become more convicted to do more. Because if people don't rise up, and you can tell by the voting patterns in this country over the last 20, 30 years, It's, you know, they just show up every 2 years, every 4 years, and just kind of vote the party, and on they go. And the reelection percentages are higher than they ever have been in history. People used to actually get involved in politics, and now they just vote or they don't vote, and they just vote for the R, they vote for the D, and our country's going down the frickin' drain, and people need to wake the hell up, because it does matter who's in power, because there's too much power in Washington, D.C. It was never meant to be like this. And I actually, you know, people are going to have mixed views on Newt, just like they're going to have mixed views on Perry. But Perry had a great speech, and he was also on a couple different panels. And he had some really good points about state sovereignty because, you know, Texas is a very standalone state. And he was exposing some stuff that they deal with every frickin' day of the federal government trying to, you know, stuff their rules down their throats about how Texas is going to do this and do that and do the other. And it is a war like we've never seen before, and it's bad. And so you just got to ask yourself, you want to live in a communist country? Just keep doing nothing. You know, you want to live in a free country and a, you know, state where your powers in your states, it's balanced, and you don't have insane people writing laws in departments that aren't even constitutional, you know, to the tune of a thousand, you know, thousands of new laws a year that you don't even, you know, that Congress didn't even write anymore. Rand Paul was talking about this. And it's so important to understand that because people in power don't curb themselves. That's why our founding fathers built the system the way they built it, because they know what power does to people. And everybody's heard, you know, power corrupts and absolute power corrupts absolutely. And everybody goes, no, that's a cute cliche. No, it's the truth. Wake up. It's bad. It's really bad. And there ain't nowhere to go. You know, where in the hell are you going to go? You know, and Reagan talked about this all the time. You know, if America falls, where? This is where everybody in the world wants to come. Why? Freedom, opportunity, economic stability. Well, those are all debatable things now. Here we are, 2014 primaries, very important, and we have a chance to do something. But you gotta do something, you know? That's it. I'm done.
Well, I'm just getting started because we're going to go one louder. We're going to go to 11. And we want to thank everybody for sharing the show. This amateur internet radio show it exists because we pay for it, but it only gets heard because you tell people about it. So we appreciate everybody sharing it on Facebook, tweeting it out, posting it elsewhere on the internet, telling people about it. Remember, nothing works like a personal invite, and if you like the perspective that we're putting forward. You don't have to agree with everything we say. You don't have to like our style. Maybe you don't even like the music I opened the show with. You can thank Rand Paul for the Pink Floyd because he quoted it in his speech, so I had to play "Wish You Were Here." But the important thing is to help people who are libertarian, conservative, limited government, constitution-loving people understand that if they merely vote for Republicans, they're actually sowing the seeds of their own destruction. And if they're worried about Obama and Democrats all day, they're missing the point. Obama and the Democrats have a playbook, and they're playing it. It's the Republicans that are lying to you about the playbook, okay? And that's what you have to watch out for. You have to help people understand this. So if you're on Facebook, go to our show page, Liberty's Thunder, like the page, right-click the like button, and click Get Notifications, and you'll find that when we're broadcasting, especially when we do the moving schedule like Open Line Fridays, which is something I don't think we've done before, but it just had to work out that way this week. And also, if you're on Facebook, go into Chris's group. That's Liberty's Talk on Facebook, and there's a lot of good information in there. All right, the lines are open, 646-649-1013, and our first caller we'll take right now from the Northwest. Luke, you're live with Rex and Trog. What's on your mind?
Hey, you know my number. It's you and the NSA, I guess.
Well, one of us does.
No.
But, yeah, I have access to the Utah Data Center.
Ah, gotcha. God, what I'd give for access to that. Ex-girlfriends beware. I'm driving back from school. Did a final today. And so I got out pretty early, and I don't have access to my computer, so I decided to call in. and share some of the college level observations I've been witness to. And there's no, what's the word? There's a huge libertarian base in the colleges right now. And, but it's not the conservative libertarian base, if that makes any sense. You know, I feel that a lot of people are saying this, libertarian, just so that they don't have to actually get into a debate and defend conservatism or liberalism. Because libertarian really hasn't, it doesn't have a label attached to it yet, if that makes any sense.
Mm-hmm.
So they use it to avoid conflicts and fights. And instead of having this educated, research-oriented work ethic, it's more of this snarky, quick-witted, make an observational joke and move on kind of thing. And it really ticking me off today and Wednesday when I was at school, you know, this past week. And one of the conversations that was going on was these Russian RT reporters quitting and this kind of stuff because they're kind of liberal libertarian, these reporters. and I don't know, I figure not to divert too much off of what you guys were talking about, but it does go into the Russian-Ukraine thing. See what your guys' input on that is. Oh, and before we actually do a little tangent.
Sorry.
I learned, and I think I was listening to Savage the other night, and he's about the only national public radio guy who's not on the same bandwagon as that Russia's bad and they're trying to rebuild the Soviet Union and he's invading Georgia and Ukraine and all that other bullshit. And he was talking about, and he had the article up on his website, that McCain, and you guys were saying this before, but more specifically McCain, during the Olympics, was in the Ukraine rebel-rousing, which is the same thing that happened with Georgia, you know, in the past Olympics, which is freaking insane. So, I don't know, there's a little more specific, you know, recent crap McCain's done, or at least, you know, Olympic side. Yeah, it's just, I don't know, this freaking country's crazy. Yeah, anyway, so I'll let you guys touch on that. I'm going to mute myself because I'm ordering chicken. Oh, still there?
I had to call back in. Sorry, Luke. Are you there? Hello?
Trog? Did we lose the host? All right, this is, live radio. These things happen. I was doing something else and thought Trog had it. In regards to, I think Luke's ordering chicken, and I lost my co-host. Is it Rhino chicken or Democrat chicken that you're ordering? But in regards to foreign intervention, look, there's a legitimate reason for defense, and you have to always be prepared to fight. Now, that doesn't always mean just direct defense of the homeland, because sometimes a threat will be so large. It could threaten some of our friends. It could threaten some of our foreign trade. And an intervention would be necessary. The problem is when the intervention is being done for corporatist reasons, not to benefit free trade per se, but to benefit some at the expense of others. And that's generally what these wars are about, especially when you go mucking around like Jihad Jay Muhammad loves to do in other people's backyards where you don't know who the good guys are and who the bad guys are or if there are any good guys at all. the best way to handle these things is diplomatically. But you can't handle these things diplomatically when you're not trusted, when you're not strong, and when you're not resolute. You know, Obama keeps drawing pink lines all over the place, and people cross them, and he does nothing. I'm not suggesting we bomb the crap out of everybody, but if you're going to draw a line, then you better be prepared to back it up, which means that a commander-in-chief had better make sure that the People's Congress is already on point with him. That's the problem that we have going on here. We have an ineffective community organizer who has been elected commander-in-chief, and this is the kind of weakness that you get. Reagan didn't have to invade anybody. Well, what about Grenada? Come on, give me a break. Or he bombed Libya. Okay, but we didn't have any Afghanistan-Iraq-style wars because people were afraid of him, but people also trusted that he was a fair dealer. And that's the important thing. The only way you're going to get that is to have principled constitutional defense and elect people who understand how to project power and be fair rather than be threatening and put us in compromising situations. And the misuse of our military is one of the worst things that both the Democrats and the Republicans have done. Obama was supposed to fix all that and make everything better, and he only made it worse. And George Bush ran in 2000 as a Ron Paul non-interventionist and ended up putting us in worse situations than we've been in a long time. And that's the key. We lost one of our other callers, but why don't you go ahead and try chime in, Trog? I thought we lost you there for a little bit.
It went to hell in a handbasket. Am I back on?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, I missed part of the tail end of what Luke was commenting on, so it's hard for me to comment on that, but I did catch a bit of what you were just talking about. If you're going to be the moral majority of the world, and this is the frustrating part to me, and you're going to get out there and stick your nose in the rest of the world and make the world safer, then you better have a moral authority that is unquestionable. And there might have been a time, let's see, I think it might have been like 1945 or so, that we had that type of moral majority in the world and the respect of the world because we went out and fought some really evil, crazy people who were, you know, bombing the shit out of everybody else, and we saved the world. And somewhere along the line, and it's a, I guess the key thing is, you know, is power is a responsibility. It's not a right. And when you forget that power is a responsibility, then you start using that power for a lot of different reasons. And that's where the confusion's at. Because like I said earlier, I'm not an anti-war person. So, you know, I'm not a peacenik at all. But I am sure anti-BS. And if anybody does, you can do the research in this day and age on every conflict that we've been in and get all kinds of information. I think that would shock most people if they took the time to really study it, including what really went on in the Ukraine and what is really going on in Crimea, because it isn't anything that you think it is, because you're not hearing the truth in Western media, because Western media is all controlled by six corporations and they're tied to defense contractors and they do the will of the government and they want to go to frickin' war and they want to invade a country and most people don't even know where in the hell it is on the map. And now they do because they heard Fox News talk about it and, oh my God, and Putin's evil, and oh my God, there's tanks on the ground, and oh my God, and you know, and it's just a bunch of bullcrap. But that's just one. That's the frustrating part. You know, when you talked about Reagan's, you know, situation, had a couple different situations in back in the Soviet communist era, but he didn't have hundreds. We have hundreds of military conflicts all over the world, and most people don't even know how spread out we are in Africa and what's going on in Africa, because Africa is now the next Middle East, because instead of trading and doing business like China is, we got to go bomb the shit out of things and cause revolutions and break countries apart and disrupt other people's trade and business in that country because we forgot how to trade, you know, because we're so damn good at bombing shit. And that's the frustrating thing, and I think that's what people are getting sick of. You know, a lot of people have I didn't know that much about Ron Paul. I don't come from a Ron Paul background. Some people do. I didn't. And so when I started researching Ron Paul, I was very skeptical about a lot of things. But one of the things that was inarguable with him was the fact that he had the highest percentage of military following of anybody in the primary. Why? Because like my son, who served in war, can tell you, war sucks. But we're sure doing a lot of it. And what happens is you start questioning, what the frick are we doing in this country? Or you find out that we're killing these guys, or these guys are killing soldiers in this country, but then we're arming and training them to invade this other sovereign country. And after a while, it gets pretty muddled, and people start getting really frustrated when they start finding the truth out. And so if you're going to be the moral majority of the world, or the police of the world, or the superpower of the world, then it better be right, because sooner or later, 10, 15, 20, 30, 40, 50 years of this crap, and people start getting sick of you, not just in your country, but around the world. And when that happens, other superpowers rise up, other economic systems rise up, because war is money, always is. You know, there's always banking and everything else. And so people start developing their own monetary systems. They break away from the trade dollar. And then your whole system falls apart. God, you know, I feel like I'm telling that Roman story again, you know? And if you study history and you look at Rome before it fell, and you look at the corruption in the politics, you look at it went from a republic and then it became a democracy with a little bit of theocracy involved there, and then they figured out they could get votes by giving away wheat and giving away favors. Then the government started seizing industries, you know, the war machine industry. And then what happened was if you voted the right guy in power, then you got the contract to make the swords. And then pretty soon it became, a corporatist, environment, or fascism, if you want to call it that. And then they had to keep doing more and more wars because the economy started falling apart. And before that, they started devaluing the dollar, or the currency. Sorry, let me say dollar. And then they started launching wars, and it was no longer sanity in what they did. They would establish governors, that came out of the Senate, and they would go over there and plunder those countries until the whole, they got weak, and the whole world got sick of them. And it's just all right there. It's just so clear. You just read it, and you're going like, wow, the parallel is unbelievable. The corruption, the moral breakdown in society, creating enemies all over the world because you stick your nose in their business, or you attack them and control them, and you call it democracy, and it all kind of falls apart. You can't do it forever.
As they say, there's nothing new under the sun.
Well, it's kind of like George Bush said, when he was running on his non-interventionist, non-nation-building platform. He was saying, this is not a Republican principle. This is not a good thing to do, that power is a responsibility. I remember, we've played those clips on here. And it was really refreshing.
Dick Cheney had other plans for the Bush presidency.
Well,
but no,
I think you're right.
Yeah, no, your points are all valid, and I think the important thing to realize is that, look, great empires or great nations or whatever you want to call it, whatever the milieu is, like Rome, like the United States, they never fall apart because of their external wars. They fall apart because of their internal corruption, which leads to external wars that are not just, that are not beneficial and that don't help people. Now, how do wars help people? Well, some wars are defensive. Some wars contain dangerous actors. So war is a part of life. You always have to be ready for war, but you don't go around instigating them for profit, for plunder, especially when you're operating like a pseudo-empire, which is what the Democrats and especially the Republicans have been doing. We're operating like a pseudo-empire. We invade these countries. We topple them all over the place. We ruin everything. We kill bunches of people, and we don't even get to enjoy the spoils of war. It all goes to the bankers, and we just get the debt. It's pathetic. We got a caller, Rich from Illinois. I'm going to bring him on to talk about foreign policy, but you mentioned W, so I'm going to play that clip first, and then Rich will be up with us next. This is George Bush in 2000, before the Cheney presidency.
Should the people of the world look at the United States, Governor, and say, should they fear us? Should they welcome our involvement? Should they see us as a friend, everybody in the world? How would you project us around the world as president?
Yeah, I'm not so sure the role of the United States is to go around the world and say this is the way it's got to be. So I'm not exactly sure where the vice president is coming from, but I think one way for us to end up being viewed as the ugly American is for us to go around the world saying, we do it this way, so should you. I just don't think it's the role of the United States to walk into a country and say, we do it this way, so should you. It really depends upon how our nation conducts itself in foreign policy. If we're an arrogant nation, they'll resent us. If we're a humble nation but strong, they'll welcome us. And our nation stands alone right now in the world in terms of power, and that's why we've got to be humble. If we're an arrogant nation, they'll view us that way, but if we're a humble nation, they'll respect us. Maybe I misunderstand where you're coming from, Mr. Vice President, but I think the United States must be humble and must be proud and confident of our values, but humble in how we treat nations that are figuring out how to chart their own course. Make a couple
sure,
of comments.
Sure, absolutely, sure.
Somalia started off as a humanitarian mission and then changed into a nation-building mission, and that's where the mission went wrong. The mission was changed, and as a result, our nation paid a price. And so I don't think our troops ought to be used for what's called nation-building. You mentioned Haiti. I wouldn't have sent troops to Haiti. I didn't think it was a mission worthwhile. It was a nation-building mission. I think what we need to do is convince people who live in the lands they live in to build the nations. Maybe I'm missing something here. I mean, we're going to have kind of a nation-building core from America. One of the problems we have in the military is we're in a lot of places around the world, and I mentioned one, and that's the Balkans. I'd very much like to get our troops out of there.
If we don't stop extending our troops all around the world in nation-building missions, then we're going to have a serious problem coming down the road, and I'm going to prevent that.
I'm concerned that we're over-deployed around the world.
I don't want to be the world's policeman. I want to be the world's peacemaker.
Your question was deployment. The force must be strong enough so that the mission can be accomplished, and the exit strategy needs to be well-defined. A lot of people are sick and tired of the bitterness in Washington, D.C., and therefore they don't want any part of politics.
Okay. I can't take any more. That was the neocon before the present neocon, sounding like Ron Paul before he got the job of neocon in chief in the Dick Cheney presidency. And we're going to go to Rich because he wanted to comment on foreign policy stuff, especially how neocons who are Democrats and neocons who are rhinos give you the same crappy wars and tell you that they're necessary, and you end up in debt with everybody in the world pissed off at you. Fantastic. Rich, you're live with Rex and Trog.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I think there's something to be said for speaking softly and carrying a big stick. We need to get back to that. Wasn't that the Monroe Doctrine? Can you hear me?
It was. I think that was Teddy Roosevelt that might have said that, but I think Obama misread that, and he thinks that you should talk loudly and carry a limp stick. So maybe you could send him that quote.
So at any rate, We need to have a strong national defense. We don't necessarily need to intervene in every conflict around the world as we've been wont to do lately. Bush was talking about Bosnia there, wasn't he? We had no compelling interest in Bosnia. That thing was based totally on a lie to begin with. Some journalist fresh out of college went over there and wrote up about some mass, what was it, mass murder of some sort, big graves and everything. And what? It wasn't there. It was non-existent. And we went in there because for humanitarian reasons. We can't be everywhere across the world for humanitarian reasons. But at the same time, we do need to exert some power. We need to have a strong military in order to, that's the best way to keep the peace. And I think that's what we're seeing now. we're tearing down our military, and Obama has shown the entire world how weak we are. We'll just bow and apologize and surrender. And what a vacuum forms, and people like Putin are going to fill it.
Yeah, and I mean, look, let's be clear about a couple of things. You know, Putin's doing what Putin does. You know, and the question we have to ask ourselves is their autocrat better than our autocrat? Well, they're both autocrats, but the problem is that their authoritarian quote leader is actually acting in their interests right now and outmaneuvering our banker meat puppet, which makes us look horrible. And it actually causes more danger and might actually pull us into wars that we won't have the luxury of saying, this isn't our business, let's get out of it. And that's what happens when you have
Putin
leadership.
Putin is exactly following the policy that best expresses their national interests with the Black Sea and the ports and the energy. The whole thing over Syria, I think, was over the natural gas thing, and Bosnia as well, for that matter. You know, the whole thing's nuts. We don't need to be there. That's the Syria thing there was bad guy versus bad guy, and none of them were our friends.
And they don't have to be our friends. And I mean, I think figuring that everybody who isn't like us somehow has to be our enemy, or we have to make everybody our friend. Look, the best way to make friends with people in other countries with other cultures is through fair, free trade, not these so-called free trade agreements and super trans-Pacific, you know, left-handed cross-dressing lesbian partnerships or whatever they make up. That's managed trade, and it's for corporatists. But if we have free trade with people, you tend to be friendly because you're involved in a productive activity where both parties benefit. But when we go mucking around in places, I mean, is Assad a bad guy? Maybe not. I don't know. I don't live in Syria. But I do know that he had a stable situation in the country where when we destabilized Iraq after that clip we just heard from George Bush talking about not being policemen of the world and having a humble foreign policy, went in there, destabilized it, and 1 million Christians fled Iraq, they ended up in Syria where they were actually protected and able to live relatively free. Then we decide to go muck it up and team up with al-Qaeda against Assad. It's just stupid. Unless, of course, your intention is to weaken the United States and make a boatload of money in the process, and that doesn't matter whether they're Republican or Democrats.
Right, and the same thing held true in Libya and Egypt. You know, Gaddafi was obviously a bad guy that, since 9/11, became halfway civil, and he was controllable. He had a fairly stable situation. And the same thing in Egypt. Here was a guy that was upholding the Camp David Accord, you know, with Israel. I think it should always be, and that's part of it too with the progressives. You know, they just, you know, they don't want us to support Israel. You know, let's be honest and frank about it. But yet, that's a lot what that was all about, because he was supporting Camp David agreement, and it's probably the only thing Carter actually did right that I agree with, actually. So I don't know. Anyway, enjoy your show, and I'd like to try this again sometime.
All right, well, yeah, thanks for calling in, Rich. We appreciate it.
I'm not as good a talker as you. All right, thanks.
All right, buddy. Good as talk.
You want to comment on what Rich said, Chris?
Well, he covered several different points, and I said this earlier. Each one of these situations, you know, you got to go back to the fall of the Soviet Union, and you look all the way up and down, you know, Eastern Europe and ex-Soviet states. When NATO was formed as a structural system to help protect Europe from the big bad Soviet Union. Well, when the Soviet Union fell, NATO was supposed to be disbanded, but it wasn't disbanded. And because it's like typical politicians and typical warmongers, it was a big war machine, and the contractors made a ton of money, and they figured, well, what the hell? Man, this works, so let's keep it. And so, you know, it's been, who knows, trillions of dollars, you know, for a system that we didn't even need anymore. Now, when you look up and down the whole, you know, when you go all the way up to, you know, Lithuania, all the way down the coast, you have some countries are still connected to Russia, by choice and trade and culture and language and religion. Some countries have chosen to move towards Europe, you know, by choice. And so here's the point when you look at our involvement, and you can pick each country and go back through the history of it, but when you come down that pipeline, you know, like Belarus is tied to Russia, and then you go to Ukraine, which is a very split culture because you got the Ukrainian culture in the West mostly, and then the Eastern Ukraine and Crimea is very high Russian populations, and most of Ukraine's trade is with Russia. Massive influx of people. There's 3.5 million Ukrainians in Russia working right now, sending money back home to a lesser economy. And then you look at Crimea, which has been a Russian military base for a long, long, long time. And actually, if you really want to go back in history and you look at Kiev and that whole cultural center, the whole Russian culture came out of there. So this is what we're messing with. And it's insanity, and it has a lot to do with the broke EU. You have to look at – it's always follow the money. The EU is falling apart. Switzerland decided not to be involved in the EU and just passed new immigration laws because they don't want this open border crap because it's destroying the cultures of these countries. So Switzerland is not involved in the EU. You've got other countries that are pulling away from it, and then you've got this rebuilt Russia – you know, that's a multi-trillion-dollar economy and hasn't been invading people, you know. Germany and Russia are very tied together economically. There's over 200 German corporations in Russia right now. And this is what we're messing with. And we're trying to force people to pick sides because for some reason somebody thought that they could go into the Ukraine and, like I said, you know, you can go to the Internet and listen to the damn – video of Nuland, you know, talking about the U.S. spending over $5 billion, plus you got Soros money in there, you know, trying to disrupt a sovereign nation that has elections, that had, you know, international overseers over the elections that said, yeah, it was a fair election. Well, you may not like the president. We don't. You know what I mean? But you don't go causing revolutions in other countries over it. They had new elections coming in less than a year anyway. But it was all over the Russia trade deal versus the EU trade deal versus who was going to, you know, have the influence. And it's insanity because it's not going to go away. It is exasperated because of these people. And we have no business in there. That's the problem. So Russia has a lot of business in there because – why does it happen?
Why does it happen? Whether you have Republicans or Democrats in office, why does it happen?
Money, power, influence, intimidation, poking the bear, see if we can piss Putin off, recreate the Cold War, then the war machine gets another $200 billion a year because Russia's the big evil enemy of the world, and, you know, of course it was terrorism.
And where in Article 1 of the Constitution is that?
I don't know. You know, I think that's a part that was written in invisible ink that only the people in Congress can see.
Actually, I think these days it's only the people on the other side of Pennsylvania Avenue who can see it because they don't even check with Congress. And Harry Reid nuked the Congress.
Yeah, they don't even read the damn bill, do they?
And John Boehner just wants to curl up in a ball and drink his whiskey and cry like a little orange baby. So he just gives Obama whatever the hell he wants. And that's the fundamental problem. And who does it aggravate the most? I would suspect that it aggravates everybody in this country who knows what the Constitution is, and the rest of them can bitch about the war, but it's their fault that it happened because they don't know why this can't be done legally by our congressional critters and imperial POTUS. And I think it's especially disgusting to our fine men and women in uniform. Speaking of which, Luke, you done ordering chicken?
I am, yes, sir.
Excellent.
Hello? Hello? Doctor?
Doctor?
Yeah. Yeah.
That was your cue, Luke, to say something.
Well, I didn't mean to break the show. But, no, I love hearing that Bush clip. And it tells me two things every time I hear it. I'm assuming that's the one where him and Barber are sitting down in the chairs. I forgot who's interviewing him. And he sounds so sincere, and I personally believe he was, and that it's part of the system. As soon as you get into that presidency and that invisible underworld that's around you, you know, probably, you know, mostly lobbyists, corporatists, and, you know, New World Order, you know, One World Corporation, whatever conspiracy theory you want to go with, gets a hold of them. It's the same thing that's holding Barack Obama back, you know. Yeah, and as I said, it doesn't matter who's sitting, you know, who the POTUS is at what time. You know, they'll bend you to your will no matter what.
Unless you're strong. Unless you know what you believe.
And I felt, you know, not to rehash on Newt, you know, because everybody knows what our opinions are on that, you know, that would have been the guy to be able to fight and do it right. Yeah, Ron Paul won during the elections. I didn't know much about Ron Paul. You're talking about, you know, my military experience and the military people, you know, overwhelmingly going with Ron Paul. I was part of the, you know, military for Newt crowd, which was a little button on his Facebook. I don't know exactly what it means. I'm probably being watched very closely because of that.
We know where you are.
You know, back in the day, you know, however long ago the election was, I didn't know much about Ron Paul, and Ron Paul was kind of, what's the proper word, Magoo to me until I really learned, you know, who he was. You know, it was like Dad or Trog. I'll call you Trog on the show.
Okay.
Yeah, I didn't know much, you know, but it only took me two elections to figure out the damn game. I don't know what it is about your guys' generation.
Yeah. Well, slow down there, Kohai. You know, it's, as Ted Cruz said, you know, it's good to see all these young people here because young people have an eye on the future. But, A, I'm not as old as your dad, so don't lump me in with him. He's a caveman. He carries a big club. But no, you're right, and I don't know that our generation or the older generations are slower. They just happen to be stuck in the paradigm of the past, meaning those of us that actually lived through the era when there was a Cold War kind of have that embedded in our psyches.
Yeah.
This is not that era, and these idiots that we've elected are playing like it is. Your generation doesn't understand that because you didn't experience that because, oh, I don't know. Margaret Thatcher, blessed John Paul II, and Ronald Reagan stood up to Soviet communism, and the Soviet Union collapsed under its own weight, and we said, oh, great, communism's gone, forgetting about the 1.3 trillion people in China, and then we decided to just muck up the world because, hey, you know what, it's a free-for-all, and we're the only superpower, and then we turn around and we look, oh, crap, communism's not gone, it's in the White House. And when I say communism, let's be clear about something. There's really been no communist government anywhere in the world, okay? Not in the Marxist sense.
Yeah.
They're really corporatist authoritarian empires with atheistic tendencies that style themselves communist. And in that sense, socialist Europe is going that way, and guess what? So are we.
Russia was actually a huge
perfectly articulated
before it fell. You know, people don't understand that. You know, it's just
go ahead. Well, that's why I think, you know, we at these national, you know, public radio guys, you know, Levin and Beck, God, I haven't been able to listen to any of them these last couple weeks.
Me
because
either.
They do come from that Cold War era. Me, at least, you know, I was born in 84, you know, and I was raised in public school, private school until we moved out of Alaska. And so I was at least taught about it. And if you look at people who were born in 1991, they'll be able to vote for the very first time this coming election. And, you know, and that was when the 91, you know, the death of communism altogether, you know. They've never experienced it. They haven't been taught about it. In fact, our damn schools teach it as an option, you know, along with conservatism and corporatism and capitalism and all that other stuff. You know, and that's and so I don't have much hope for my generation either. The only the only hope I really see is that they're sick and tired of the control. Now, in what direction that goes, I don't know, because you ask people my generation, like, I'm not doing nothing wrong with my cell phone or nothing wrong on the Internet, or I'm not a terrorist, so who cares?
Well, you know, you're not doing anything wrong. You have
like
nothing to hide.
Sin. Well, and what Snowden said, which was very profound, his very first, I don't know if it was first or second interview, but, you know, children born nowadays, they will never know what it's like to experience a private moment or a private thought.
That's pretty bad.
And it's probably one of the most profound things I've ever heard about my generation. So,
well,
I don't know.
Luke, that's a good point. But as far as not having hope for your generation, our generation, older generations, whatever, remember something, that the corporatist politics of control preys upon sowing division. And what you'll see with this Obamacare debacle, which is guising as a, you know, nationalized health program, it's really a corporatized economic destroyer, is that they're going to create a division. Yeah, but they're going to create a division and animosity between generations in order to pit the expensive, unhealthy seniors against the young unemployed who are paying the bill. This is how they sow division in order to keep us pitted against each other, so that people don't focus on who the real enemy is, and that is the usurpers that have taken over the government and have bent the Constitution to satisfy their profit-seeking desires as opposed to you know, real governance. Now, here's the interesting thing, though. This is what Alexis de Tocqueville warned us about in the 1830s. He was a Frenchman who was observing the United States and made a commentary about it. And he made some profound predictions that are coming true. And one of the things he said is that, having thus taken each citizen in turn in its powerful grasp and shaped him to its will, government then extends its embrace to include the whole of society. It does not break men's wills, but softens, bends, and it guides it. It seldom enjoins, but often inhibits action. It does not destroy anything, but prevents much being born. It is not at all tyrannical, but it hinders, restrains, enervates, stifles, and stultifies so much that in the end, each nation is no more than a flock of timid and hardworking animals with the government as its shepherd. That's why so many people in this country seem to hold out no hope for them. They've gotten used to the fact that just about everything we do is the domain of government. From your education to your health to your food to your transportation, everything. And what happens is, when you give up that ground, when you cede the ground of the civil society and create a vacuum, government is going to come in and fill it, and it's going to fill it ineffectively, inefficiently, and contra proper human anthropology. The job is that we have to rebuild the civil society and crowd out the government. And the way you do that is you have to elect people like Rand Paul and Ted Cruz, who are willing to restrain the government so that people can freely interact and rebuild the civil society. That's a hopeful position. But you have to tell people that.
Yeah. I was just thinking about what Tocqueville was talking about, is what communism tried to sell. You know, and he was a little bit earlier than Marx, but when Marx first started coming up with his ideas, his utopian worker society ideas, a lot of people don't understand this, and this is that historical thing that we talk about all the time, that, you know, the communism that or the communist revolution of Russia, that was a Western idea. Marx wasn't from Russia. And, you know, a lot of people don't understand that, you know, Hitler's initial rise to power was funded by a lot of people on Wall Street. There was just a lot of stupid people doing a lot of stupid things. And next thing you know, we've got these rise of these evil empires, whether it was Nazis or, you know, fascism in Italy or communism or whatever. And they all run their course. And the problem is, and I really believe this, that when Ronald Reagan, you know, defeated the USSR communism, everybody, big sigh of relief, and we thought communism is dead. But that Western idea, that socialistic
you know, workers' paradise, what de Tocqueville was talking about, where you turn people into, you know, work units and they're just kind of, you know, placid and, you know what I mean? They just kind of living their lives and giving up their tax money so that, you know, a handful of people can tell them how to live and how to think and how to dress and how to eat and what you can drive. And, you know, that all manifests itself in Europe. And about the same time, you know, we've had it in this country since the turn of the century. I mean, we had a socialist party. We've had communist parties. But the American people knew the difference. That's the difference today, because we got people, and I look at what they're teaching our kids, and we've got people today who actually think that's a better way to govern the people. I mean, look at the Occupy Wall Street and some of the people, their mindsets. They were correct that Wall Street was corrupt, but they forgot the other side. Wall Street's in bed with the government, you know, and that connection between the two, what I like to call fascism or corporatism, is what is destroying our country, that and the banking system. And so they got part of it right, but their solution was more government, you know. And so they're voting for people like Obama. And that's the insanity of it, because he's just another corporatist meat puppet, as you like to say. You know, I mean, he's in bed. You know, the Democrat Party has gotten more money than the Republican Party from Wall Street the last two election cycles. What the hell does that tell you? That means they're more willing to play ball with that futuristic, what Luke was saying, you know, whatever conspiracy you want to call it, that New World Order, that one corporatist government entity. I mean, if you look at the TPP treaty, that's a corporatist, if anything ever, is the most fascist corporate written contract that eliminates the power of the government and empowers international corporations. That is the end result of 100 years of advancement in this. I mean, it's terrible.
And just and to be clear, the TPP partnership is not about toilet paper.
double layer TPP. But you know, yeah, and if it wasn't for WikiLeaks actually leaking information on that treaty, the American people would not even know what was in that treaty, because it was all done in secret. And it gives up the power of our resources. You have to look it up, do some research. It's terrible. You know, it'd be like basically the federal government submitting itself to big international corporations. That's your Democrat Party, folks. You know, for you Democrats, you don't get it. You know, you think that the government is some moral authority that's supposed to make it all fair? No, that's an illusion. People fighting for their individual freedom and their individual prosperity and their lives working together in a social structure, that's what creates the checks and balances that makes a civil society, not government. Government has no soul. So whoever's in power, you know, a good one might be in power this time and everything is better, and then a bad one comes in power and everything goes to hell. I mean, that's the only difference, is who's in power. And so, you know, in my opinion, and we have this conversation all the time because we talk about the elections, but, you know, I'd get rid of 90% of them, because they're all a bunch of freaking lying thieves. They're corrupt. They're embedded. They're bought and sold by lobbyists and the war machine. You know, the corporatist war machine, which is about the only company making money in this country. You know, they spend $1 trillion on a jet they can't even freaking get in the air. I mean, it's insanity. Anything you want to track down and study, it's right there, if you're willing to take the time to go, okay, these guys sound crazy, but maybe they're not. Maybe I better go do this research for myself. And
maybe we shouldn't give them the benefit of the doubt anymore.
But the more research you do, the more your worldview starts to change in terms of, I mean, think about it. While America suffers and we're in a fake recovery, all of Wall Street's been paid back and has been making a fortune. If that doesn't tell you what Barack Obama's about, you know, he came in on this hope and change bull crap.
and you know, people were going to pay the price, and people were going to go to jail, and we were going to fix all this corruption, and it's gotten worse. That's your freaking hope and chains right there, folks. And I'm not, you know, and yeah.
Got
so, you know, here we are. Go ahead. Sorry.
No, no, I was agreeing with you. Is that it he promised the world and delivered, you know, the gum from the bottom of his socialist shoe. And look, you can't really blame Obama. I mean, if you really read the guy's books and you really studied him before 2008, you knew who he was. You knew what he was going to do. And now the means of how he's going to do it may have appeared differently during the campaign, but the method is really not as relevant as his end game. And it isn't much different than what George Bush was doing. Maybe their hearts are in different places, but as far as their effectiveness, it's just about the same. And the problem is that when you don't bind the government under the rule of law and the men in government under the same rule of law as everybody else, the civil society and those who administer government have to be bound by the same laws to create order and maximize freedom, then you get the arbitrary rule of men and their whims. And the problem is that that consolidation of power attracts the corrupt. And even if they happen to be, you know, ideological novices who think that they can do something, if they don't have the wherewithal to stand up to the sycophants that are surrounding them and controlling them and massaging them, then it won't ever happen, which is precisely why focusing on 2016 is foolish. Because even if you get, well, let's just say President Rand Paul in 2016, and you have a McConnell-Reid Senate and a Boehner-Pelosi Congress, nothing will change. The power will just shift away from the now not so imperial president towards the, you know, imperial Senate, and that is because you have forgotten who you are. You have forgotten the duties that come with the responsibility of freedom. If you don't govern yourself and you don't govern your society internally, then you will be governed by the rule of tyrants. It's just that simple. We've been talking about, Soviet communism and its fall and the aftermath where we became the only superpower and kind of screwed up the world. Why did that happen? Well, there was that tension between East and West, which created a nice, convenient mind lock on the minds of people in the East and the West, because war tends to make people compliant and willing to give up certain things in order to buy some false sense of security from government. When you lose that, you got to create new monsters. And unfortunately, they haven't been able to create new monsters in the way that they thought they could, and so it's become more chaotic. But, and this is kind of an important point, because John Paul II was Bishop of Krakow, and Poland suffered probably the most under the communist regime of the Soviet Union as it was taken over, which is probably why they're all shitting their pants right now as the Russians move into Crimea. But it's important to note that he understood what that did and what it does, and he fought against it. And he represented the moral aspect of that war, where you had Reagan and Thatcher representing the political and diplomatic and military aspect of it. You had John Paul II representing the moral aspect. And this is an important thing to remember. Everybody has some purpose outside of their duties as citizen. You have to figure out what that is, but you're not going to be able to exercise it if government is telling you what it is. And that's the fundamental problem. Now, the successor to St. Peter, who came after John Paul II, Benedict XVI, now Pope Emeritus, was here in 2008 and visited the White House. And this is what he said about the founding of America. He said, in a word, freedom is ever new. It is a challenge held out to each generation, and it must constantly be won over for the cause of good. Few have understood this as clearly as the late Pope John Paul II, in reflecting on the spiritual victory of freedom over totalitarianism in his native Poland and in Eastern Europe. He reminded us that history shows time and again that in a world without truth, freedom loses its foundation, and a democracy without values can lose its very soul. Those prophetic words in some sense echo the conviction of President Washington, expressing in his farewell address, the religion and morality represent indispensable supports of political prosperity. Just think about that. If you don't know who you are, and you don't know how to govern yourself, meaning take care of yourself, take care of your neighbors, take care of your family, take care of your communities. You create a vacuum for the politicians to come in and, quote, take care of you. And that's where we are. And it doesn't matter what party they're from.
Yeah, you nailed it. You know, we get off on this subject a lot, and obviously our chats are very deep into the moral decay of our society. But if your society, if people are weak, they don't have a vision for themselves, moral breakdown, you know, and you can tie it back to religion, then they become susceptible to their passions, and they forget about governing. And that's what's important. You know, it's, I always remember that thing when that lady, you know, says to Benjamin Franklin when he walks out of the hall, and she says, "Sir, what kind of government did you give us?" And he says, "Ma'am, we gave you a republic if you can hold on to it." And the Constitution, you know, was not very long. Wasn't a lot of writing considering the fact that they were launching a country that would become, you know, what America is today. But a lot of it was because they set it on a foundation of moral principles. And you don't have to govern people if they govern themselves. You don't have to tell people, you know, not to beat their wife or to shoot another man or to kill a baby or, you know, don't be a drunken fool. You know what I'm saying? The more people govern themselves, the less government you need. And what we've become is a fat, lazy, drug-infested, whether it's illegal or legal drugs, 70% of all Americans are on some kind of prescription medicine. It's insanity. Our children, you know, in America, 90% of the Ritalin in the world is used in this country. We've got 25% of the world's population in prisons, and most of that being nonviolent offenders. We are turning our country inside now. We don't secure our border, and then we have 800 bases around the world and 130 military conflicts to some degree or another. And what happens with America, and this is what frustrates me, is we go over there and cause a revolution in a sovereign nation because we got some hair up our butt about, you know, some ex-Soviet country that fell in the 90s. And we need a new enemy to battle and to scare people with. So the news lies 24/7 for weeks on end and never exposes the truth of what really happened in the Ukraine or Crimea or any of it. And people buy it up because they're waiting for somebody to tell them what to fear, how to think, what to be mad about, how to vote. I mean, that's basically what it is. I mean, whether or not you're watching Bill O'Reilly or Hannity or any of the rest of them telling you a bunch of bull crap to program your mind or the commercial in between, it's all the same thing. It's marketing. And you can only sell, you can't sell anybody anything unless they're willing to be sold. Anybody that's ever been in sales knows that. And so they build this warm, fuzzy trust with you. They scare the shit out of you with the stuff they report, and then they tell you how to think, and then they tell you what they want you to believe the facts are in any given situation. Then you become a compliant drone, a sheeple, and then there you are. I mean, what the hell? You don't need totalitarian, you know, dictators. All you got to do is have marketing and Fox News, and you got the same damn thing.
Huh. Yeah, well, whether it's Fox Noise or MSLSD or
something. You know what I mean. I'm picking on Fox.
Yeah, it's all the same. It's
Fox
mind management.
Right,
but you're absolutely right. But they can't manage your mind. They can't manage your perceptions if you know what you believe and what you stand for. Yeah, mm-hmm. But you have to want it. And what you're seeing now, what's playing out, you know, the, quote, Republican Civil War, you know, who's going to be the successor to the great Hopi Changi, you know, Supreme Lord of the Democrats, and, you know, all this kind of stuff. This theater is just garbage. What's really at stake here is who are you as an American, and what are you willing to do about it? If your only intent is to show up in November and pull a lever for a donkey or an elephant, you're really not participating, and you're part of the problem. You know, the simple fact that you get to vote does not make you free. They voted in the Soviet Union. they voted in Nazi Germany. Voting does not make you free. That is a process. It is a methodology. It is a means to an end. What makes you free is if you have a stable order that is a balance between respect for individual rights, respect for the civil society, and the civil society is comprised of individuals in families, free associations, churches, business organizations, all these other mediating institutions between individuals and their flourishing, and of course government as well. You have to have government because it is the authority that is charged with being the ultimate arbiter when there is a conflict between competing interests in a plural society. But if that government is arbitrary and capricious, then you don't know where you stand. But if that government is bound by law and that the laws are promulgated and orderly and not contradictory with each other, then we all know in advance how we can act and order our lives together, which maximizes freedom.
Predictability.
But if you don't know that, if you're not looking for that, then you will not elect people who will further that end. And you will just get empty promises from bloated windbags like Mitch McConnell, Cronin, Crony Cornyn, Bob Bailout Corker, Jihad Jane McComed, Lindsay Lightness Loafers Graham, Darth Sidious, and Nazi Pelosi. That's what you get.
Whatever.
Any of those windbags. What you heard at the beginning of the show, and I'm going to play a clip now towards the end that's going to have a little bit of Ronald Reagan and a little bit of Ron Paul from their CPAC speeches in the past, is right now there's a show going on, and it is the show that is the bottleneck for the right wing of the duopoly for the 2016 races. And what you're seeing play out is a fight between empty, suited, Brooks Brothers-wearing, lobbyists owned by the CLEC, the consultant lobbyist establishment complex, and real conservatives and libertarians who believe in the Constitution and stand up for liberty. You've got to get active and know who they are, and get out there and fight for them every day because they're going to fight for you, not because of who they are, but because of what they stand for. In about 6 minutes, you're going to lose the live feed. If you want to listen live, you have to call in 646-649-1013. You can listen on your phone. If you're listening in podcast, just keep rolling. If you're listening in your browser, we'll cut you off. But all of our shows are available on blogtalkradio.com. Just go to blogtalkradio.com, search out Liberty's Thunder. You scroll down the page. Every show is there. You just click on the hyperlink, which is the title, and it plays right in your browser. Chris, we got about 6 minutes to wrap up, and then we'll play that closing clip. It'll be about 20 minutes, so why don't you take a couple of minutes for your final thoughts.
Is Luke still on? Am I here?
Yeah, he's here.
Oh, there we go. Yeah, I was muted. I was making a lot of noise driving over the road. You want to say something before we close out? No, actually... what you were covering on, you know, that absence of moral understanding and, you know, Judeo-Christian biblical moral understanding and the government filling that hole in our lives, that was going to be my follow-up to the previous statement. But you've articulated a hell of a lot better than I ever could. And I just think that's important for, you know, especially these young libertarians, the live and let live, you know, let me be a heathen and don't judge me libertarians, need to understand about that kind of society is that doesn't work. That doesn't work unless I can shoot you dead just because you pissed me off, you know?
Yeah.
You know, because your kids are making too much noise next door, you know? That's the only way that society works, and that's pretty much anarchy. There's a big difference between live and let live, and you know what? I have a moral guiding light in my life. I don't care what you do. Just don't force it on me. You know, that partial conservative, partial libertarian streak that believes in that, but not in legislating it through government, you know, and that's, that's more the balance that, you know, we need to understand, at least my generation. So you articulated that point very nicely after I talked last night. So, no, that's, you guys could go and mute me and finish up what you got to do.
Yeah, good point, man. Whose kid are you?
Mini cape man.
To re-examine this mini trog nickname. I'm not sure why.
Troglodyte.
Okay.
Yeah,
well,
no,
I want to thank
you.
I just want to quickly thank Luke and Rich for calling in and let everybody know again you got less than 3 minutes if you want to continue listening live to the close of the show, 646-649-1013. All right, you're on, Trog. Final thoughts.
And where in hell is Deli? She should have called in. You know, I'm sitting here looking at a map, and I don't ask me why, because I never turn my chair in my office and face this big-ass map that I have on the wall, and I'm just looking at this thing thinking, how did we get here? You know, and so much of it, you know, our history is amazing. It's mixed. There's good and bad in the whole history of this country. It's just an amazing experiment in individual freedom and responsibility. And I think that's so important that we get that word responsibility in there every time you say the word freedom, because I think half the problem in this country is that we think about rights and freedom and we don't think about responsibility. And Luke made a note about, you know, this free-for-all libertarian mindset. Well, that's no different than the 60s hippie generation of, you know, leave me alone, live and let live, and, you know, sex, drugs, and rock and roll, and, you know, we're living the results of that in our society. Now those psychos are in control of our country, our institutes, and our colleges. And so that anarchy of that mindset is a lot of why we're where we're at. So, you know, you have to examine these things because, you know, this ordered society, you know, you're going to have it one of two ways. One is you're going to control yourself and society is going to control itself, or government's going to control you, because that's what governments do. And Rex, you talked about the vacuum, and that's so important because, you know, you think, well, government is encroached on every aspect of our lives, and whine and complain and post articles about Obama all day long. Or you can wake up and go, why did I allow government to become this big? And that is a different mindset. And that's the mindset of a free-thinking citizen versus a whining, complaining, wait until my guy gets in power and I'm going to vote for, you know, my guy. And then when they take over the Senate, then it'll be better. Oh, wait, now we got to have the presidency. Oh, wait, you had the presidency in the Senate and the House for 6 freaking years, and look what you did. Your out-of-control spending and corruption and greed are what gave us Obama and their control of the House and Senate. So, you know, it's that concept of going back to, you know, freedom and rights and responsibility. And that's, I think, what we attempt to do every week is to get people to think about the deeper issue. And I love what Rand said. Again, I said this at the beginning of the show, that, you know, he said, you think I'm talking about Republicans? I'm not. You know, when he was talking about winning, he's talking about you got to get the right. We've had the neocon rhino Democrat Republicans in power positions in our Congress for a long time. We've had liberal communistic neocon donkeyinos in power positions in the Congress for a long time. And over the last 50 years, they've destroyed our freaking country. Now, are citizens going to wake up and start to do some research for themselves, first determining what it is you believe in and what's important to you, so then you can then make some really good evaluations on the people that are running and vote some quality people in office so that they will quit abusing the power of the federal government and the rule of law, and we can start to get some limited government. See, this is the thing that people, you know, the Democrats want to scare us with limited government. Oh, it's going to give you, you know, corporatism and all this and all that, and life is going to be terrible because, you know, the free enterprise. We haven't had free enterprise in this country for a long time. What we've had is fascism in this country for a long time. And so if you have true free enterprise for the free exchange between citizens, services, and products, that's what makes America great, not these massive Wall Street corporations, you know, that are almost more powerful than the government, especially when your government's broke. And that's so important, you know, and back,
just one last thought on this concept of this, you know, this imperialism around the world of America spreading democracy and blowing people up all over the world and interfering in other people's elections and governments, which is essentially against the law to do, and definitely against international law if you care about international law. Some people actually do. But if you're weak and you're broke, then you start making bad decisions. You're blowing up the wrong people. You're interfering with the wrong governments. You're in bed with the wrong corporations because you're operating from a position of weakness economically. You can never have a moral government or country or people if you do not have economic freedom. And that includes the government being fiscally responsible. People who are broke and in debt and out of control make bad decisions. Why in the hell would you think that a government that is broke, in debt, and out of control would make good decisions? That's so important. None of this is difficult. I just don't think people stop and think about it and articulate it. And that's hopefully, that's what we do on this show. That's it. That's my close.
Good close. All right. This was the special Open Line Friday, Liberty's Thunder. We'll be back, I guess on Sunday for our regular show, assuming that we can put one together. It'll probably be, more of this CPAC Crimea stuff, but probably not as chaotic because Trog and I are pretty good about getting these points across. I have to admit that I'm not really good about screening calls and taking them, but I do appreciate everybody who calls in, especially Luke and Rich tonight. We want your feedback, so go to our Facebook page. That's Liberty's Thunder on Facebook, and join Chris's group. That's Liberty's Talk on Facebook, and let us know, because the whole point here is to get people who love the Constitution, who believe in authentic, ordered liberty, who want freedom, to build coalitions with other like-minded people. Don't try to agree on every single point. You don't have to share the same religion. You don't have to have the same lifestyle. You don't have to have agreement on most things that are left up to human choice. You just have to have broad agreement on the principles that unite us as a people. The spirit of those principles is outlined in the Declaration of Independence and the framework for how we put that agenda forward is in the Constitution of these United States. And these states created the general government in order to band together on those things that only a general government can do. Very, very few things clearly enumerated in the Constitution, and everything else is left to the states and to the people. Freedom is attractive because it allows for more choice. But liberty isn't mere preference and choice, because as Luke said, if my choice is to shoot you because you piss me off, then if your liberty is predicated on nothing other than choice, then I have every right and power to do that. It's not about that. Liberty is about becoming fully human, about exercising your free will to be more of who you are. That can't be done if the government is telling you who you are. You have to know who you are. You have to have self-mastery over yourself. You have to share the news with other people who are so empty that they are willing to just go along to get along and follow either the blue team or the red team into oblivion. Wake them up and get them to understand that there are people who are willing to enter public life to serve and administer in government according to the constraints of the Constitution, so that we can pick up the ball and run with it to build a better future for everybody. But that can't be done if the government is filling vacuums you have created by destroying the family, wiping out any sense of transcendent truth, eliminating any sense of responsibility for the freedom that you have, and living in a chaotic environment where anything goes, because then the government is going to clamp down like a fist because the people in power want you controlled, because that's how they profit off you. That's where we are. But this is the time to get excited, because the oligarchs, the duopoly, especially the rhinos, are freaking out because this is our chance. This is our year. What's going on at CPAC right now is a lot of jockeying. They want to push Chris Krusty the Clown They want to push Jeb Bush. They want to reelect Cornyn, and unfortunately Texas has put him on the ballot. And they want to reelect McConnell and Graham and all the other losers. You have to find people like Matt Bevin, people to challenge the entrenched rhinos, and you have to protect people like Justin Amash and Trey Gowdy and Louis Gohmert, and support people like Mike Lee and Rand Paul and Ted Cruz, which is a ongoing effort. And the only way you do that is ask yourself, who am I? What do I stand for? Do I believe in ordered liberty? Do I believe in what America stands for? And have I touched at least three people today who didn't know before that we are engaged in corporatist wars, that we are engaged in dangerous wars that weaken our country, that we are spending money we don't have, that we are in more debt than we've ever been, that the Federal Reserve is printing more money than it's ever printed, and that the ones that talk to you about fixing these things never do, but there are some, and point them out to them, have them support them, and you can give them your time, you can give them your talent, you can give them your treasure or a combination thereof, but help them or step up and be one of them, so that our government is administered by citizen statesmen who do it temporarily out of love for their fellow Americans and their country, not to aggrandize themselves and become profitable. And that's precisely what most of them are doing. Now, we stand on the shoulders of giants, and giants that go back 2,000 years in Western civilization, which, whether you're a Christian or not, is really not the point. That's an issue between you and God for your personal salvation. Work that out in great fear and trembling. But our historical tradition is Judeo-Christian morality and an appreciation of the transcendent, Hellenistic philosophy, and Roman law, mostly handed to us through the Anglo-Saxon tradition of common law going back to the Magna Carta and coming to us from great men who fought an eight-year war against the most powerful military on the planet to provide you with the liberty you have today. One of those men, Charles Carroll of Carrollton, in 1766, this is before the War for Independence, in 1766 said, "Liberty will maintain her empire till a dissoluteness of morals, luxury, and venality shall have prepared the degenerate sons of some future age to prefer their own mean lucre, the bribes, and the smiles of corruption and arbitrary ministers to patriotism, to glory, and to the public weal." Don't be that dissolute generation. Be the generation that stands up, like those who stood up against Great Britain and her corrupt parliament and absolutist monarch, and made a loud cry for liberty. We are free men endowed by our Creator with unalienable rights, and that among these are life, liberty, property, and the pursuit of happiness. We can be that second bulwark so that generations from now, those who have inherited liberty will look back and say, those are the people who stood up and restored the republic and have given us the freedom that we have today and have benefited the whole world. If you want to be that shining city on the hill that cries out for liberty and stands as a light to the whole world instead of the one that plunges it into darkness, now's the time. 2014 is the year. Don't let up. It's proud to stand shoulder to shoulder with you. Thanks for spreading the word and making the case for the conservative cause for liberty. This is Rex and Trog signing off.
What we do is, if we need that extra push over the cliff, you know what we do?
Put it up to 11.
11, exactly. One louder.
Why don't you just make 10 louder and make 10 be the top number and make that a little louder?
These go to 11.
How do you win young people? Who are the two Republicans in modern times who have most energized young people? Ronald Reagan and Ron Paul. So apparently the key is being named Ronald. But if you think of it, neither one of them were young, rugged, James Dean, rebel without a cause. They were septuagenarians. And yet what did they do? They stood for principle. They painted a bold, inspiring vision for America, for how all of us can be better. And young people came out by the millions and said, that's the vision I want to be.
Grateful to the American Conservative Union, Young Americans for Freedom, National Review, and Human Events for organizing this third annual memorial service for the Democratic platform of 1980. Someone asked me why I wanted to make a three in a row. Well, you know how the Irish love wakes. But I'm delighted to be back here with you at your 10th annual conference. In my last two addresses, I've talked about our common perceptions and goals, and I thought I might report to you here tonight on where we stand in achieving those goals, a sort of state of the Reagan report, if you will. Now, I'm the first to acknowledge that there's a good deal left unfinished on the conservative agenda. Our cleanup crew will need more than 2 years to deal with the mess left by others for over half a century. But I'm not disheartened. Even with all our recent economic hardships, I believe a feeling of optimism is now entering the American consciousness, a belief that the days of division and discord are behind us, and that an era of unity and national renewal is upon us, a vivid reminder of how our nation has learned and grown and transcended the tragedies of the past was given to us here in Washington only a few months ago. Last November, on the Mall, between the Lincoln Memorial and the Washington Monument, a new memorial was dedicated, one of dark, low-lying walls inscribed with the names of those who gave their lives in the Vietnam conflict. Soon there will be added a sculpture of three infantrymen representing different racial and ethnic backgrounds. During the dedication ceremonies, the rolls of the missing and dead were read for 3 days, morning till night, in a candlelight ceremony at the National Cathedral. And those veterans of Vietnam who were never welcomed home with speeches and bands, but who were undefeated in battle and were heroes as surely as any who ever fought in a noble cause, staged their own parade on Constitution Avenue. As America watched them, some in wheelchairs, all of them proud, there was a feeling that as a nation we were coming together again, and that we had at long last brought the boys home. A lot of healing went on, said Jan Scruggs, the wounded combat veteran who helped organize support for the memorial. And then there was this newspaper account that appeared after the ceremonies. I'd like to read it to you. Yesterday, crowds returned to the memorial. Among them was Herbie Pettit, a machinist and former Marine from New Orleans. Last night, he said, standing near the wall, I went out to dinner with some ex-Marines. There was also a group of college students in the restaurant. We started talking to each other, and before we left, they stood up and cheered. The whole week, Pettit said, his eyes red, it was worth it just for that. It has been worth it. We Americans have learned again to listen to each other, to trust each other. We've learned that government owes the people an explanation and needs their support for its actions at home and abroad. And we've learned, and I pray this time for good, that we must never again send our young men to fight and die in conflicts that our leaders are not prepared to win. Thank you very much. Yet the most valuable lesson of all, the preciousness of human freedom, has been relearned not just by Americans, but all the people of the world. It is the stark lesson that Truong Nu Tang, one of the founders of the National Liberation Front, a former Viet Cong minister and vice minister of the post-war Vietnamese communist government, spoke of recently when he explained why he fled Vietnam for freedom. "No previous regime in my country," he wrote about the concentration camps and boat people of Vietnam, "brought such numbers of people to such desperation. Not the military dictators, not the colonialists, not even the ancient Chinese warlords. It is a lesson that my compatriots and I learned through witnessing and through suffering in our own lives the fate of our countrymen. It is a lesson that must eventually move the conscience of the world." This man, who had fought on the other side, learned the value of freedom only after helping to destroy it and seeing those who had had to give it up. The task that has fallen to us as Americans is to move the conscience of the world, to keep alive the hope and dream of freedom. For if we fail or falter, there'll be no place for the world's oppressed to flee to. This is not a role we sought. We preach no manifest destiny. But like the Americans who brought a new nation into the world 200 years ago, history has asked much of us in our time. Much we've already given. Much more we must be prepared to give. This is not a task we shrink from. It's a task we welcome. For with the privilege of living in this kindly, pleasant, greening land called America, this land of generous spirit and great ideals, there is also a destiny and a duty. A duty to preserve and hold in sacred trust mankind's age-old aspirations of peace and freedom and a better life for generations to come. God bless you all.
Great to see
you,
everybody. Great to see you. I'm glad to see the revolution is continuing. Well, we have first seen some of the results of the revolution of a few years ago, and that was last year's election. I understand we had a few new members sent to Congress, and we have you to thank you for. But I do want to take a moment to take a little special privilege and say we also had a new senator from Kentucky, and we like that too. So there's a lot of exciting things going on. There is truly a revolution going on in this country, and we've been dealing with this and encouraging it because I do believe that we live in a time where we do need a change in attitude, a change in ideas. We don't need to just change the political parties. We need to change our philosophy about what this country is all about. You know, this past week we had a pretty good victory for the freedom movement. We had a vote come up all of a sudden under suspension, and it had to do with the Patriot Act. And the Patriot Act, we know, has nothing to do with patriotism. They always name it opposite of what it is. The Patriot Act is literally the destruction of the Fourth Amendment. That's what it's all about. Now, the one thing in Washington they haven't quite understood is what's happening in grassroots America, because they assumed that everybody loved the Patriot Act. We'll bring it up under suspension and pass it automatically. Well, we didn't get a majority vote, but they didn't pass it automatically with a two-third vote, sending a message that this country is waking up and we want to protect our civil liberties as well as our economic liberties. This week I was scheduled to be on a financial program. I've been on a few of those lately, talking about things like the Federal Reserve and a few other things. But I never got around to talking about this program this week about the Federal Reserve because all of a sudden there was a speech given by Mubarak about his potential resignation. Of course, he resigned today. So that was the subject. But A lot of people now say, what should our position be? What should our position be about finding the next dictator of Egypt? And I would say, we need to do a lot less, a lot sooner, not only in Egypt, but around the world. Some people want to argue with us about that and say we have a moral responsibility to spread our goodness around the world, and it's our obligation to do this. But let me tell you, fiscal conservatives should look at this carefully. How much did we invest in that dictator over the past 30 years? $70 billion we invested in Egypt. And guess what? The government is crumbling and the people are upset, not only with their government, but they're upset with us for propping up that puppet dictator for all those years. Yeah. Now, to add insult to injury, where do you think the money went? To Swiss bank account. That family, the Mubarak family, has $40, $50, $60 billion, nobody knows, stashed away in other countries, other areas, of your money, and that is true. Now, you know, it used to be that conservatives were against foreign aid. I'm still against foreign aid for everybody. Now, I have a saying that I've used to describe foreign aid. Foreign aid is taking money from the poor people of a rich country and giving it to the rich people of a poor country. And there can't be a better example of that than what we did with Egypt. We took money from you, made people poor, it contributed to our debt, billions and billions of dollars, and all we get is chaos from it and instability. There's nothing wrong with what the founders talked about. They talked about having friendships and trading, getting along with people, and staying out of the entangling alliance and the internal affairs of foreign nations when it's none of our business. Government, as you all, I am sure, would agree, is out of control, and it's very hard for us to get a handle on it. So let's say we even theoretically, and a miracle happened, and we balanced the budget where we are today. It would be still a disaster because we're spending too much money. But it wouldn't change a whole lot. When a crisis comes, guess what happens? Guess who does the bailing out? The Federal Reserve used $4 billion to pass out without congressional approval, and most people say, oh, well, that's the Federal Reserve's job to do that. No, it is our job to check up and find what the Federal Reserve has done, audit them, and find out who their buddies are that they're taking care of. Creates money out of thin air. They can loan to banks, central banks of the world, to other governments and international financial institutions, and we're not even allowed to know. They resent the fact that when I ask these questions that they don't have to give us information. That's why the bill to audit the Fed is the first step to ending the Federal Reserve. But the Federal Reserve will end itself because they will destroy the dollar. Since the Fed came into existence since 1913, they've eliminated 98% of the value of the 1913 dollar, and it's continual erosion. They pumped up at first when the crisis hit $1.2 trillion, another $600 billion, and believe me, there is an economic law that says you just can't continue to do this. So Congress has a responsibility. They should cut back, but Congress has a responsibility to protect the value of the currency, and that means that we have the moral and the legal authority to put checks on the Federal Reserve System. You know, there's been a lot of talk about bipartisanship after the election. We need bipartisanship. And, you know, in some ways that might be true, but I'll tell you what I think about it. I think, and I believe, that we've had way too much bipartisanship for about 60 years. You know, we have bipartisanship on medical care. You say, yeah, you know, the current administration has given us bad new medical care, but what has done with the other administration? We've been involved for a long time. It's the bipartisanship of the welfare system, the warfare system, the monetary system, the challenge to our civil liberties. It all goes through with support from both parties. So there's way too much bipartisanship. This should be a challenge of the issue of philosophy, good philosophy versus bad philosophy. And when you can agree on something, you should make coalitions with whomever will agree with you and come together. But I'd like to see some bipartisanship, though. What I would like to see is take those big government conservatives who love to spend money and never cut their efforts and their spending, and get the big government liberals where they want to spend and never want to cut, and let them get together and say, you know, it's time, you know, this deficit is good. Let's have a little bit of bipartisanship and cut both.